Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming, and welcome to this parish council meeting to be held tonight, the 13th of January, 2020, at 7:30 p.m. And we'll move straight on to the first item, PC 11419, to receive and approve apologies for absence.
Apologies received from Councillor Buxton, and also for noting apologies from both of our district councillors and our county councillor.
Okay, duly noted.
To vote on the council
And we need to vote. We have someone to. Okay, Councillor Kilmurray, seconded by Councillor Wilson for.
Accepting.
Chairman.
Reasons given.
Accepting. And all those in favour? Okay.
Okay.
PC 11519 to receive any declarations of interest and dispensation, please. I know there are a couple. Councillor Kilmurray?
Item PC 12119, use of S106 monies, declaring interest as a director of the hub, and I have requested dispensation being granted.
The same.
Councillor Travis?
Same.
I have granted dispensation to both councillors so that they might take part in discussion and answer questions, but not vote.
And to leave the room after or vote?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Moving on. PC 11619. Chosen.
Oh, sorry. I've just realised. PC 12619B regarding the PTFA. My wife is a committee member on the PTFA. I have failed to ask for any dispensations. I'm happy to not take part in that one if necessary.
Okay.
Don't think okay. Point of clarification then. Could I ask the clerk, do Councillor Kilmurray and I have to declare an interest in the approval of the payment of the PC hub licence fee?
Yes, sorry. Would you leave for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Just let me make a note of that. That was agenda item
125 19E.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, I missed one.
Okay. Moving on. PC 11619. Chair's announcements. Information only. The only thing just report this month is just that I will be making contact with our tenant in Little Hands to go through outstanding issues. Hopefully during the month of January, she's not been available due to recruitment like that before that. And she will have already received the good news about the contract staying the same financially. Okay, moving on. PC 11719 to approve the minutes of the Parish Council meeting held on the 25th of November. Are there any comments or any issues anybody wishes to raise? Have you received anything on that? Can I have a proposal then, please? Councillor Barnes, can I have a second, please? Councillor Hart, all those in favour? That's duly passed. Unanimous. Right, PC 11819 to report back on the minutes of the Parish Council meeting 25th of November. And Mr Clark, are there any
items? No items to report other than the community grant awards that were awarded and now repaid.
Okay, thank you. And to move on, PC 11919, public participation for up to 15 minutes, 3 minutes per question. Are there any questions? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's now been 8 months since the council resolved to remove the tombstone-like stone from the community garden in the High Street. But it is still there. In view of this delay, I would be grateful to know the date on which the council will be returning this garden to its previous state, including the replanting or the planting of a rose bush to replace the one that was sacrificed to accommodate the stone. I would suggest that an answer along the lines of as soon as possible would not perhaps be acceptable.
Okay. Thank you very much for your question.
I can offer an update.
If you'd like to. Thank you.
So I had meetings with councillors in the last week or two of the last calendar year We have now identified where in the cemetery the stone is going to go, and we are just waiting for contractors' availability to get the thing moved. We would hope it would be in the first 2 months of this year. I do not have a specific date.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Clark. I'm glad to know that it is in hand at the very least.
Absolutely.
I look forward to its the garden's reinstatement.
Thank you very much, and so do we. Thank you. Are there any other questions from the participating audience? No? Okay, moving then on to PC 120/19 to consider setting the precept for financial year 2020/21. Now, I'd like to thank, before we start on this one, our RFO for the very seriously well put together document and all of the information that's been given to us to make ourselves available. I'll pass over to the Chair of the Finance and Good Governance Committee to take this forward.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, Council, hopefully you have been able to look at and peruse the spreadsheet that's provided with the supporting documentation. Just a little bit of history on it. The RFO clerk and assistant clerk put together a first draft of the budget in November, and then a small working party met to sort of run over that first draft, went through it line by line and sort of made minor alterations and suggestions. A second draft was then poured over line by line at the Finance and Good Governance Committee meeting in mid-December, shortly before Christmas. And so what you are looking at now is a sort of final version, really. We're not going to go through it line by line tonight, purely because that would take somewhere in the region of 1.5 to 2 hours. Headline figures from the front page on it really are that the precept requirement is going up by about £12,000, £12,050, which is a 4.7% increase in the precept. However, the number of households that will be divided by in the village has gone up slightly with some of the new build houses starting to come on stream, and therefore the cost per household is going up by per band D equivalent, going up proposed £5.22 per house per annum, which represents a 3.97% increase. So, as I say, we're not going to go through it line by line, but do any councillors have any specific questions or queries? Councillor Travis?
Yeah, could I just ask for your opinions on the reserves position, and also your predictions on the reserves position at the end of the forthcoming budget year?
Yes, now I'm sure that RFO will be able to put me right if I get this wrong, but the current forecast for the reserves at the end of this financial year, in about 2 months, will be equivalent to 5.1 months of annual expenditure, and our reserves policy is to head towards 6 months. The prediction for the end of financial year 20/21, I think we will get to 5.9 months, so we'll pretty much be bang on where we want to be.
I think the reason I raise that is because I think it should be said in public how seriously good that result is, given that a few years ago the council was in some serious financial trouble and it's now back almost where it should be.
Absolutely, thank you. Any other comments or questions from councillors? Everybody had a good chance to look through it. So again, just echoing the Chair's comments, I'd like to thank very much the RFO and the clerk and assistant clerk for putting so much background work into this and presenting us with a line-by-line, very well thought out budget, which, as Councillor Travis says, compared to a few years ago, actually spells out in great detail in some places the exact requirements of the council and where we expect to be moving forward. So it puts us on an excellent footing for the future, for the next few years, I think.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Cowley. It just leaves it for me to... do we have a proposer to accept the precept? Councillor Cowley, and seconded. Councillor Travis, all those in favour? So the budget is carried. I think that's... Yes.
So I didn't catch the hands on this side. That's unanimous.
Thank you very much, Councillor Cowley. Okay, so let's move on that forward. Okay, next thing. Right, the next item on the agenda is PC 12119, to consider the uses of S106 monies. And I'm sure all of us here will thank Councillor Travis for his very comprehensive report that he's prepared for us online, which I know we've all read with great interest. So I've opened the floor to parish councillors to ask questions of Councillor Kilmurray and Councillor Travis, as the majority of the money in this category at this stage will be targeted towards that money. So has anybody got any questions for our two councillors before they leave the room, before we vote? Anybody any considerations, having read all the documentation and what the money is to be spent on? Councillor Cameron.
Considering the internal works to the kitchen, which I think is phase 1A?
Correct,
yes. Yep. Phase 1A. The sort of overall net effect in terms of the floor plan is to achieve an increase in the space, the size of the kitchen, by about 300 millimetres sort of lengthways, yeah, and about 300 millimetres widthways along about half of its
roughly,
length.
Yes.
I'm basically just wondering whether or not that 300 millimetres is worth £17,000 and whether or not there are sort of smaller scale alternatives that might be employed. Part of the presentation talks about gaining a very large amount of worktop space, for example. Now, a lot of that, I think, is coming from getting rid of the glass display cabinet, as it were. Now, I mean, one thing that just occurred to me was whether or not just getting rid of that and sort of moving the espresso machine around, you wouldn't get the extra 300 millimetres. Effectively, is that 300 millimetres going to be worth it?
I think it's an integrated solution. So it's not just about floor area. In fact, it's not really very much about floor area at all. It's more about reorganising things in order to achieve a number of separate and distinct objectives. But you've mentioned worktop space. That's an absolutely vital thing. One of the problems that they have at the moment is that they don't have enough food preparation worktop space. So when they're very busy, they're falling over each other to try and prepare food. So this solution provides that, and it does it by means of putting in a second double freezer unit. The double freezer unit is bigger than the space that's available to put it in. We need the double freezer unit because another problem that they have is they don't have enough freezer space on hand. So those two things together are kind of a self-solution. One gives you, it gives you at the same time more worktop space and more freezer capacity. Coming the other way, coming towards the cafe, there is a small change again, as you've said, in the movement of the counter outwards. The real reason for that is the installation of the second fridge unit, because they haven't got enough cool space either. And so the installation of the second fridge unit means you have to move the counter a small distance. So the increase in floor space in itself is a consequence of other objectives. So I don't know if that explains it. To comment on your point about the cost, the costs are very much to do with the cost of the equipment. So the cost of the freezer unit, the cost of the fridge unit, the cost of the changes to the decanter itself as a result of those things moving around. These are the reasons for the cost. And the ventilation system, of course. So, yeah, I mean, there are good reasons for the costs being what they are. I don't think they can be reduced very much at all.
Thank you, Councillor.
There's an addition to that, as well as getting, by moving the coffee machine round and gaining that extra worktop space with the extra freezer underneath, it also allows us to put another rack of shelves above the counter, which gives us an awful lot more storage for equipment that is currently sitting on the counter. Maybe some dry goods, depends how they want to organise that exactly, but it's, you get an awful lot more counter space plus the additional storage, which frees up more counter space.
Okay, so there's a lot more to it than just the floor plan.
Yes. Yeah, the floor plan is a result of the other reasons for change.
Excellent, thank you.
Councillor Hart?
One of the areas that I'm aware is a bit of a bottleneck in the kitchen is that entrance, or the exit from the kitchen into the atrium. So how will this change that? Because at the moment, if somebody's working the till and somebody wants to access
the spoons,
sauces and spoons for the cups of tea, so how will this improve that situation?
It'll improve it marginally, because there'll be another, about that much more space for manoeuvring, and I think because the counter's moving in two directions, it will feel surprisingly more spacious.
I think that's one of the areas, if you look at it, you can see if it only had
yes,
300.
Yes, you're ducking and diving under people who are using the till. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Hopefully it'll improve it.
One from me. Do you envisage that the increased workspace and everything they are making more for the people to actually work on the food, you are going to be able to put out more meals in a timely manner for lunches and things like that, and it will encourage more people to come in because they'll be able to turn around?
Well, yeah, but I think, you know, we see a steadily increase in footfall. I think in the last part of last year, there was a definite increase in the number of people coming in, and it puts huge pressure on the kitchen. As you know, part of the plan, the second phase of the plan, is to build more meeting rooms. That will bring in more customers, and it will bring in more reasons to produce food. It's just a consequence of our future plans that we have to do something to make the kitchen activity a bit easier. You know, I don't know. It's not easy to say, will it increase it by 5% or 10%? So it'll make the whole task easier to perform, and make the life of the people in the kitchen a bit easier too.
And at the moment, the kitchen staff work extremely hard, and they're relatively cheerful about it, but we give them the best conditions we can offer them, but it's not ideal. This will definitely make great strides in the direction of ideal.
Yeah. Are there any further questions?
So coming out of the kitchen area and more into the
atrium.
Is there, because you mentioned where the sort of the filing cabinets are, you mentioned that there's a lot of sensitive information, personal information in those filing cabinets. I can't recall where you said those filing cabinets would move to.
Well, the plan is to create behind this wall here, and sort of two floors, there'll be a storage space below here at the ground level, and another one above it, with an access door through that wall there.
Yeah.
So up here you'll have a secure room where we can store things like spare chairs and so forth.
Okay.
In particular, when the second phase, when we build more rooms onto the building, it'll give us somewhere to put things like a safe, because for a short time there won't be somewhere for the safe there, but we need somewhere for a staff room. So we'll have flexibility by having this extra secure space. It will change in its use as it goes through time.
Okay.
But we need to have that flexibility where we've got some accessible space that we can use for furniture, to put the safe and the cash in, to act as a staff room, maybe on a temporary basis. Unless we have these spaces available to us,
for the second phase of build. It will make the life people's lives almost impossible. It will shut the building down. We have to try and keep the building in business while we're making changes.
So but to answer your specific question about the filing cabinets, the plan is that they will go into the room down here,
okay.
So that there'll then be a locked door.
Yeah, so I just wondering if there's any, if that's the case then, and I know you thought where the door might go for the downstairs storage area that's...
There's an option. I mean, there are two drawings actually, one showing the door coming in, sort of facing you as you come in through the front door, and there's another one, which I prefer, but we haven't made the final decision yet, which would come behind the desk, so it would be like a rear room.
Back office.
Yeah,
a back office.
Because I wondered then, is there any utility in trying to consolidate the desk? You've got quite a big amount of desk space on either side, and I think it makes sense to try and consolidate those desks so you free up a corner.
Yeah, well...
I know it's not honest with your decision, but I just thought, you know...
This is quite difficult to do. The library is a separate activity,
okay.
And quite often there are two people at the hub desk, and so it would make it very awkward. So I think the library desk will stay, and we'll probably access the extra space down here through a door behind the existing desks to give a bit more space for the people working that side.
There are thoughts to reducing the size of the library desk and rearranging that area a little to make more space.
We're talking about a few millimetres really, and there will still be space for two people to work there.
Okay.
But it would we'll have to see. There's a meeting. I'm meeting with the library committee. Is it next week, Arthur?
Haven't got my diary.
I think it's next
week. Well, do, yes.
So I'm meeting with the library people in a couple of weeks or next week to run through them the plans that we have for the kitchen and the impact that may have on the library desk, and to talk to them about the best ways of managing that new situation, assuming we get money to do it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay.
But you know, so there will be a impact on the library area of some sort, but it won't materially affect the way the library desk works. It might just affect the shape of it a little bit.
Okay.
But that's really for optimisation through discussion with the library staff themselves, which hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
Any other questions, Councillor Kelly?
Since the supporting material was published last week, I have discussed it with a member of the public, who may or may not be my wife, who visits the hub quite regularly with small children and a buggy. Now, her comments, which I echo very much, are that reducing the amount of space between the front corner of the kitchen counter and effectively the library desk and that sort of corner of the building there, that is often... People congregate in the smallest space they can find. If you ever go to an airport, people always congregate in the doorways between big rooms. And this happens here, is people tend to congregate in that area either because they're looking for drinks in the fridge or chatting to someone who's getting a book from the library or waiting to pay. And it feels like reducing that space there. Now, I know you have plans to just pull the library desk back a little bit. What's your sort of assessment of how that's going to affect flow through that area,
because it
make big differences.
The plan has been drawn up by the architects, same architects that drew the plans for the whole building originally. We asked them to do a drawing of the new proposed kitchen footprint and to show exactly what the dimensions or the distances would be.
1,424 millimetres.
And that is currently the minimum distance existing down there between the desk and the library desk, the counter and the library desk. So what it does is retain the minimum distance that's there now.
It shifts it around the corner slightly.
Yeah, that's the target. I mean, it's not ideal, no. But we're trying to get a court into a pipe park.
Okay.
It's not ideal.
Okay, but I think on the drawing I've got here, I can't see that is the same as the current minimum distance. That's good. Now the other thing is about the proposed new room down the bottom. I I think that's a great idea, but only if the door comes off the back of reception. I think if the door comes off the front entrance porch, it's going to be problematic, because at the moment, people, rightly or wrongly, use that sort of dead space for buggy storage, especially on a Monday morning. There are children's groups up here. You get a lot of buggies parked in there. Obviously, if there's a store in there, that's going to be reduced. And if there's a door there, it can't be used at all. So I think having the door off reception makes a lot of sense from the records point of view, and from retaining a little bit of buggy storage point of view. And so I think I'm sort of going on record for the audio recording here, that if the door ends up coming off the entrance porch rather than behind reception, then that's not what I supported.
Yeah, well, it's not what I support either, so you're preaching to the choir.
Further questions? I've just got one more question. You've allowed a contingency in the payments. How comfortable are you that that contingency is going to be sufficient and we're not going to see a scope creep?
Well, they're all hard quotes. Mm-hmm. We've been through the different job elements in detail. We don't think we've missed anything. These are all, in most cases, they're either the local tradesmen that we routinely use on the building, who have a history of delivering, or they are quotes, hard quotes, from people like the air conditioning, people who, admittedly, we overspent on the original air conditioning installation here before, but the preparations for that are now part of this existing installation. So I'm confident, really, that we'll manage it within the contingency that's there.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions to councillors before they leave the room? Okay, well, you kindly exit. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question? Is it too late? It wasn't to them, but it's just a general question.
Yes.
So we spoke before that, you know, this is obviously a significant chunk of the money.
That's one of the 6 monies.
Yeah. And we said before that there's only a few other buildings that the money would be possible to use for.
I'm going to talk about that one.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, there is that one. I'm going to talk about the pavilion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I just wanted to make sure that we are sure that nothing, we don't need to spend it on anything else. I know it was a bit of a, we think we don't.
I think there's, correct me, Mr. Clark, about £6,000 or £7,000 left over, isn't there, after this money available for buildings that are assets?
The total pot of money is £36,521.86.
So in theory we've got £6,500 available, subject to this being the maximum. It could even come inside that, because there is a contingency figure already been allowed for it. So that I will be mentioning that.
Yeah, okay.
So it leaves me to ask for a proposal.
Can I just ask another question? So the contingency that's built in, if it's not spent, then it comes back.
Well, it won't go out.
It won't go out. Okay. So it won't go out.
It will be there to be spent on either the hub or other things for other ones that are proposed.
Okay.
But,
is it possible, Chair, to vote on phase 1A and 1B separately, as they're completely separate projects that don't affect each other?
Yes.
Because in theory, phase 1A could be done without phase 1B or vice versa. So just wondered if
we're going to do that, then we need to understand the rationale for why phase 1B, because obviously that's going to be in line with TTP are donating a large amount of money, which is going to be spent on refurbing the hub. And if you've got the storage and everything else in place before you do that, then it's not going to inconvenience the hub too much. You know, you're not going to it's one follows the other, as it were. Because if you don't do that one and you leave it over to the TTP area, it might cause problems with ongoing usage and things like that, until the storage and various other bits and pieces. So I think the two do go together, but they can be voted on separately. But they are needed, both of them, to be done before the TTP money comes in. So. You think, Mr. Clark, should they be done separately? Or should it be done as a single item?
I shall leave it to your discretion, just a suggestion.
I would seek clarification from the two councillors who left the room on that one.
Okay, could we get... Don't get excited, we haven't voted yet. There is another question from Councillor Cowley, specifically about voting for this two-pronged, so two votes for the two separate parts of the process. I did try to explain, just to outline, that the storage and all the other side of it is, it would help very much with the TTP money coming in, because it means you can work around things, because having the storage and all the other bits and pieces done at this time would allow you a better flow with the TTP money coming in. So if you didn't have that part of it, that's where I've left it. But obviously, you need to pick up.
I think there's two ways of answering this. If you forget that TTP ever exists, TTP money ever existed, then I would still want to be doing exactly what we're asking for here, because you know it's self-evident. We have a staff room which is health and safety advisor has said is unsafe because it's stacked full of tables. They just pile against the wall like this. In here, routinely, and it's not so tonight because the chairs are all there, but routinely when this room is rented out, those chairs are all stacked against the wall. It's very unprofessional. So we should be having somewhere to put these things properly, and you know, to give the staff a proper staff room. Assuming that there was no future building expansion, I would still be saying that's what we need to do.
My question to the chairman was whether or not we could vote on phase 1A and 1B separately, because they've been presented as two separate projects that don't affect each other, with separate quotes. So from a transparency point of view, rather than presenting councillors with an all or nothing, it just enables us to demonstrate which ones people do or don't support.
The projects are independent, they're not dependent on one another.
Yeah.
We would like both of them to go ahead, of course. How you vote, whether you split it or whether you do it all as one, is down to you guys.
And I think it's quite valid.
We refuse to influence that.
I think it's quite valid. It's a habit of two separate votes.
Okay. So you're happy that they are two separate things and they're not dependent on each other?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Okay, right, so we'll take on that basis. I think we'll do the two votes. So phase 1A, do I have a proposer for phase 1A? Councillor Hart, do I have a seconder? Councillor Barnes, all those in favour of 1A? That is carried unanimous. All parties. And can I have a proposer for phase 1B? Councillor Cowley, can I have a seconder? Councillor Wilson, all those in favour? It's carried unanimously.
Okay.
If you could open the door again for them. Thank you.
Councillors, council voted separately, both projects were approved.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Right, we do have, as Councillor Kent has mentioned, we do have some additional funds left available to spend on premises to further and better enhance the community. And I would like to recommend that Councillor Travis and myself explore the opportunity to use those funds in the pavilion. To improve the quality of the pavilion, to make it a better building for letting out, and also to work in conjunction in part with groundwork to see whether we can enhance the building to make it more suitable for their activities, to maybe get a bigger opportunity for more youth in that building and enhance that, but also to do other projects within the building, which obviously I'll mention the kitchen just as one, but to actually use the balance of those funds. So what I'm looking for is to put a proposal forward that we do exploratory work at this stage with the possibility of spending the balance of the money on the pavilion. So can I have a proposal to allow us to go forward with that? Councillor Kilmurray, seconder? Councillor Barnes, all those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you very much.
Can I make a suggestion that you look at the number of PowerPoints in the building as well?
Well, this will be the sort of thing that we will go around. We want to look at and explore.
Kitchen, the kitchen's the obvious one.
Yeah. There are a lot of opportunities to do things, and groundwork have also mentioned that there are things that they might like to see sort of that would help. Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Chair. It's also worth pointing out to Council that there is currently planning consent for the development of 23 houses at the Moor. And that consent has another 2 years left on it before it expires. Assuming the developers crack on and start that development, then there is a specific sum of money, the exact amount of which escapes me at the moment, but there is a specific sum of money in the S106 agreement for that development for the pavilion, and as part of that specifically for the kitchen. So if you decide you don't need to use the remainder of the present pot of money, then assuming that development goes ahead, there will be another bite of the cherry at some point down the line.
Okay. If we Mr. Clark, just to ask a question, if we were to say use the balance of the money that's available currently for that, and we did the kitchen and we did the pavilion, what would happen to that money that came in specifically for the pavilion?
You would have to negotiate another use for it with South Camps.
Okay. Do you think that's possible?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much. Just for information. Okay, next.
Can I just clarify as well, just for the sort of record, the S106 money, the 6,500 that's left over, am I correct in understanding that is specifically for spending on council assets and specifically for indoor buildings?
Indoor community facilities.
So our options are the hub, the pavilion, mm-hmm. Little Hands, mm-hmm. or the fire engine shed, I think.
That's
the
workshop.
Given that Little Hands
has a revenue stream.
Yeah, and given Little Hands its own revenue stream, the pavilion is the only likely space for it to go.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, thank you everybody for that. And, right, moving on, PC12219 to consider a combined report from district councillors, county councillors. Obviously, we have no one in attendance to go through the report. I'm assuming that everybody has read the report. I will mention something under PC124B. Which I'll pass to our clerk on that, which has been highlighted by District Councillor Hales, which is about the emerging local plan. Follow that through under 124. Right, moving forward now, PC12319, Melbourne Time Bank. We've had the progress report from our Time Bank manager, coordinator. I think it makes for a nice read again. We seem to be progressing steadily with increased members and organisations potentially in the pipeline as well. I don't think there'll be any questions on this area. If anyone's got any questions at the stage. Right, we'd just like to note for the record to thank our Time Bank manager for the diligent work that's been done so far, and hopefully long may it continue, because it seems to be quite well received in the village. Right, moving on now to item PC12419, planning matters. I'd like to pass over to the chair of our planning committee for PC12419A, just for thinking, Mr. Kilmurray. Councillor Kilmurray.
As has been through the planning committee and main council as well last meeting, the land on Back Lane has now was up for planning permission. We were objecting to that quite strenuously. However, the bad news is that planning permission was granted without it going to the planning committee. Officer decision, which is unfortunate. There is an option that we can continue to slow things down a little bit by designating it as an asset of community value. This doesn't mean that we own it, just that it's an important piece of the village. You have the relevant document in your agenda pack relating to the definition of an ACV and how to go about deciding whether it counts or not. Looking at Section 5 talks about what counts as an ACV, which is actual current use of the building, which is not applicable, or land that is not an ancillary use, then furthers the social well-being or social interests of the local community. So is it used for social community use? And ancillary use in this case is something like a pub's garden. That's ancillary use. This is not, it's just plain land. And it's realistic to think that there can continue to be the same use, which, assuming the land is not built on, is entirely reasonable. The land is of community value if, in the opinion of the authority, which is South Cams, there is a time in the recent past when actual use of the land furthered the social well-being, and there's a time within the next 5 years where it would continue to be used like this. Oh, I'm paraphrasing, obviously. So, from that point of view, it seems to pass. So we should be able to designate it as an ACV. However, if you scroll on through the document, you get to the selling an asset diagram. Basically, what it allows is when the owner decides to sell, there is a moratorium of 6 weeks where we can declare whether we have an interest in it or not. It doesn't mean that we will get a discount. Please step in if I'm missaying anything, Mr. Clark. So it's still at market value, or we can try and negotiate a lower rate. If we declare an interest, then there's a full moratorium of 6 months where we can try and come up with an agreement and raise the funds to purchase the land. Given that this is land with planning permission, it's going to be sold as at a price. It won't be just the few tens of thousands that the plain land would be. So, having read the document, I think that we can declare it as an ACV. But I wonder if there is a point in doing so, because I don't think we're going to be in a position to buy it. Thoughts?
Councillor Travis.
Has anybody considered getting it professionally valued so that we have some idea?
I'll answer this. So, as the chairman has explained, basically, when you register for a piece of land or property, when you nominate a piece of land or property to become an asset of community value, it is the district council who decide whether that happens or not. We don't automatically get to do it. We have to apply, and the district council decide. The next step would then be to get the district valuer in, so they are basically a dedicated valuation agent that county district councils and parish councils will use. They will come out, produce a report for which we would have to pay, but that will put a very comprehensive value on the land, and the district council will almost certainly take whatever figure comes out in that report as the value of the land, and that will be the selling price. So it essentially means that if the land comes up for sale on the market at any point in the future, and it is an asset of community value, then the organisation who applied for it to be registered as an asset of community value get first dibs on it.
Councillor Barnes?
How is the land currently being used? I'm not familiar with the bit of land that we're talking about. Is it used for anything?
Yeah, it has a fairly lengthy history of being used as open recreation space, which is the cause of the present objections to its proposed development. And it was actually earmarked to become formal recreation space at one point in the past. That didn't happen for lots of reasons. But the representation that's been made to council from residents of Melbourne is that it is still used as...
Mm. And is it kind of mown, and is it like a piece of grass? Is it?
We don't maintain it.
No. Is it maintained by anybody, basically? Is it just kind of a bit of open land that
it's a bit of
just
open land.
Kids saying sort of thing?
Okay. Yeah, it's a bit of rough land.
It's on back lane, although it's accessed from Green Banks.
So if we
lawns, isn't it? The lawns.
So if we got it, would we then turn it into a more formal sort of play area, or what would be the plan
if we if we purchased it, yeah, we would be then liable to maintain it, whether we just leave it as open space or equipment on it, that would be a future decision.
So whether it had equipment on it or not, it would still be designated as open space, public open space, and it would be written into the deeds that it would be maintained in perpetuity for that purpose.
Councillor Kilmurray, I do recall our county councillor did say, we were talking in the last meeting about this with regard to open spaces and the amount of land that is supposed to be allowed per village, etc., etc., and we are way underweight.
Indeed.
So would there be any way that this actual building consent could be challenged, not costing us an arm and a leg? I can see the clerk is shaking his head. But because it seems ridiculous that we've actually got a situation where we are way under our allowance, or what we should be, according to County Council. But
the land, the history is that this piece of land was designated as open space by the developer. That was changed by District Council, by the Planning Authority, and it was then enabled to be sold off to a private individual who's now got planning permission for it to build two properties, semi-detached, and it's no longer public land, or designated to become public land. There is a possibility that we could put a compulsory purchase on it, but that would require 5 years worth of evidence going forwards, and a lot of money, and basically it's not going to happen. There is no way that we can just jump up and down and wave our hands and say we want it because it's open space and we haven't got enough. I mean, we are woefully short of open space, but unfortunately we can't just confiscate it.
Councillor Barnes.
You mentioned that we have a right to request this asset of committee to put in the application for it, and you said that there was a cost associated with the report. How much?
I'm not sure.
The last time I used the district valuer was 2016, and actually it was for a piece of land that's about the same size, and that report was about £1,500.
Okay, and it sounds to me though that in going through this process, it would at least would it slow down the ability of it to be sold for planning permission
if we're in the process of putting the ACV on? I don't think so. I think it would have to have the ACV.
I'd want to clarify that, yeah. But if the ACV was granted, it would slow it down.
Yes.
But if the land came on the market before it had been designated as an asset committee value, then I actually don't know the answer to your question. I need to go and look it up.
Councillor Barnes?
I just wondered whether there are any more bits of land like this that kind of are possible to slip through the net, or whether, whether it's a one-off.
My understanding is it's a one-off at the moment. This vehicle is typically used to preserve pubs that are in danger of disappearing from high streets. That's the most common. But I've also seen post offices, sort of valuable retail shops.
Mm-hmm. That's different as well. We did that in Barley, in the Fox and Hounds. We set it up.
My brother's village is now a community asset. They bought it and run it as a community pub.
Councillor Travis.
In order to make a rational decision on this, I mean, it really is a question of making a reasonable guess as to the value of the land as a piece of land with planning permission, and setting that against the likely funds that the parish council might have to spend. And if the first number is a lot more than the second number to be afforded, then unfortunately we run out of road with this.
I just think it's, bearing in mind the residents that were here and how strongly there's a lot of strong feeling, I think we always have a duty to at least explore it. And I don't know, just like you can have a community-run pub, perhaps a community could come together to try and save a piece of land, because it just seems if we can do something, then I think we in fact have responsibilities to at least try and then find out, you know, get more information, and at least we've done what we could do. And I also would like to pick up on what Councillor Barnes said, you know, and actually proactively going forward, know if we have got any more bits of land like this that could, as you say, slip through the net. It feels, yeah, it's such a shame that we missed this, and it wasn't until it was
too late.
Yeah,
almost too late.
But I think, you know, I would very much like it as to at least look as though we've done everything we could.
Okay, Councillor Kelly.
Sort of in response partly to Councillor Travis's thing about the potential finances, I mean, the budget for next year has something like £18,000 going into reserves. And obviously we have reserves, and there are also other contingencies in next year's budget. So one could argue that there is some flexibility of monies available. The other thing is section 11 of the document talks about compensation. Private owners and former owners may claim compensation for loss and expense incurred through the asset being listed. Is there any reasonable expectation that the current owner of the land might effectively sue us if we register his bit of land as an ACV, and that would incur more costs on our side?
I would suggest that any action they wanted to take would be directed at the district council, because it is them who would be registering the land.
We
apply to the district council, they as the planning authority have the final decision. So, and if they decide yes, it's going to be registered, they do the registering.
Right, okay.
Sorry, I don't know if I've misunderstood. So that piece of land has now got planning approved. It might not come up for sale again. They might just start building.
They might, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Would there be any opportunity to get a couple of local estate agents to value the land?
No, you must use the district valuer.
No, I mean, just to give us an indication of what value. Would it be worth asking a couple just to see whether we could get a general idea to give us something to know what we're working with? Because if they value the land at £100,000, then we're out of the ballpark. But if they valued the land at £20,000, we might be within the ballpark. Obviously, one to 20,000, I'm using those numbers. But it gives us an indication as to what we're actually looking at and what we're trying to deal with. If we just ask a couple of local estate agents to give us an indication as to the value of the land, if we could get two to do that, knowing that there's nothing in the back of it for them.
Well, yes, you could do that, but any valuation they provided you would not be material to the ACB.
No, but it just gives us working numbers to sort of understand what we're looking at. Councillor Travis?
Sorry. I would have thought, picking up on Councillor Hart's point, have we got anything to lose by going to the District Council and asking their advice on whether we can proceed here with this process? Or would they just expect us to go forward with it? I mean, do they provide us with advice on this? I mean, it seems to me that the planning department at South Cumbs has placed this situation on us. Can we not ask for their advice?
We can. It's not actually the planning department, though. It's the new communities department, I think, that do that. But yes, we can go and have an informal conversation with them, certainly.
Okay, Councillor Kilmary.
Just looking at Rightmove at the moment, there is a piece of land up for grabs on the lawns, which may or may not be the same plot of land as we're talking about. 320,000 land with planning permission.
That would be it then.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to get to the benefit of this gentleman's heart, are we, by saying, could you let us buy it back?
From your experience, Mr. Clark, you mentioned that the district council, they would give a value of the land.
Yeah.
And how does that compare with the market value of the land?
I've never compared it to a market value. I never wanted the district value. In the experience I've had in this in the past,
yeah.
I didn't use commercial outfits at all.
Okay. I think really we're down to the point of, do we want to proceed and push this for an asset of community value or not? So I think the resolution that we're looking at here is, do we ask Mr. Clark to actually approach District Council to set the wheels in motion to ask for this to become an asset of community value, bearing in mind that we're looking at potentially a cost of £1,500, which, by the sounds of it, doesn't look recoverable. So the question is, do we proceed with District Council? Can I have a proposal?
So just to clarify on that, there is no fee for the registering and application of an SUV. But if you ever wanted to buy it at some point down the road, then obviously you need a valuer, and that's where the district valuer comes in. So but it may be the council wants to know how much the land is worth before they decide whether it's worth registering it as an asset community value.
So let's put this into two parts then. So do we want to approach District Council and get the district valuer in? Can I have a proposer for that option?
Sorry, I'm feeling confused now.
This is to get the valuers in to actually tell us what the land is worth before we want to assess whether we want to put it up for an asset of community value, to understand what we're dealing with here in value terms. If we want to put
sorry, can I just also further clarify then? You don't have to do it in that order.
No.
It may be that the land might not come up for 20 years.
Land appears to be for sale, does it not?
The values change.
The just looking at Rightmove again, it's a picture of the front elevation. If that is the correct elevation, then it's not the land we're talking about. But it's
single building plot with implemented consent for six-bed detached house.
Yeah, that's not what this is. Two sevens.
Yeah. And double garage back room. Where's that?
Right, so I think to
move this is still land with planning permission. It's not going to be vastly different in size.
I think we need to move on. So what I'll do is ask, do we have a resolution positively to list this as an asset of community value? Do we wish to proceed down that road? Let's take that first. Can I have a proposer? Councillor Hart, a seconder. Councillor Cowley, all those in favour? It is
7-7.
And anybody against? So that's carried to list it. The second part of this is, do we have a proposer to push forward the request to have the land valued at this stage, or do we want to wait? So the proposal is, do we go for to have the land valued by the district valuers? Can I have a proposer for that? So that does not pass. So that's. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes. Moving on to consider any updates under B, PC 12419B, to consider any updates on the emerging local plan. I was going to pass this over to our clerk, but I was approached by Councillor Howes to say that he wants us to encourage as many people as possible to identify on the website and get basically the Google Greater Cambridge local plan up and fill it in and complete as soon as possible.
Okay, yeah, so the reason I agendaed this for tonight is because today is the day that the consultation on the forthcoming local plan, which as the Chair has just pointed out, is called the Greater Cambridge Local Plan. It's a shared initiative between South Cambridge and Cambridge City. The consultation with a shiny new website went live today, and I was hoping when I arrived at work today that I might be able to understand what sites in Melbourne have been put forward, but none of that information has been published yet. So the consultation at the moment and all the blurb on the website is about the big strategy and how they intend to sort of do what they're going to do over the next 5 years. There are no details yet, unfortunately. I am told that they are coming at the end of next month. In the meantime, I do encourage councillors to Google Greater Cambridge Local Plan, because it's going to feature really quite heavily in the work of the Parish Council over the next 5 years or so. And there is a consultation on there at the moment, excuse me, which council may well decide they want to respond to, and that consultation runs for another 6 weeks or so. So it will feature at planning committee meetings for the foreseeable future. And it's also something that the Futures Working Party are working on as well.
Yeah. Which we've already gone through. Okay, any questions on that? Okay, let's move on. PC 12519, Finance Matters, item A, to receive and consider the monthly financial reports, which we will have a chance to digest. again, our RFO is put together in line with expectations, I think we are pretty much, and there's a very comprehensive report at the back to identify any anomalies, and there are only one or two of those. So has anybody got any questions for our RFO? Okay, thank you very much. Can I have a proposal to...
You just need to note that.
Oh, just a note. Sorry, duly noted. Item B, to receive and consider the approvals list for December. Has everybody had a chance to go through this? It's mostly paid out, just to acknowledge the questions.
Sorry, Chair, is that December or January?
December.
This is December. This is for December now.
We're only halfway through January. We don't see the point in that.
Okay. So, any questions on the December list? Okay. So, to accept the December expenditure transactions, can I have a proposal, please? Councillor Kilmurray, can I have a seconder? Councillor Cowley, all those in favour? That's carried, unanimous.
Thank you.
Right, to consider a recommendation under item C from the RFO to transfer £115,000 to e-deposit accounts.
So the recommendation from the RFO is that this money should be sitting in a deposit account to earn some interest, if nothing else. Your financial regulations dictate that any internal transfer in excess of £10,000 must be accompanied by a resolution.
So the proposal is to transfer £115,000 to a deposit account. Can I have a proposal, please? Councillor Wilson, seconded. Councillor Kilmurray, all those in favour? That's carried, unanimous, all parties. Thank you. Right. And item D, to consider an approved signatory list for financial matters.
Thank you.
I'll pass over to Mr. Clark here.
So this was actually an agenda item back in the full council meeting in November. However, largely due to me not paying enough attention, I didn't realise quite fully at the time that the resolution needed to be accompanied by the names of the signatories, which we didn't do. So I do apologise, but it's back for you to do it again. This time the minutes will have the names of the signatories in it, and then we can get our investment accounts, which you already approved some months ago, open and up and running. So we have now produced the official document, and it's got the names of the signatories on it, who are the four existing signatories. I just need a quick resolution from Council that I can put those names in the minutes.
Okay, so can I have a proposal for that, please?
So for the avoidance of doubt, that is Councillors Clark, Hart, Kilmurray and Cowley.
Okay. Can I have a proposal? Councillor Wilson, can I have a seconder? Councillor Travis, all those in favour? That's carried. Unanimous.
Thank you. I will be writing to signatories and asking them to pop into the office when they get a couple of minutes just to come and sign that document.
Okay. And item D, to consider an approval, item E, to consider approving the payments for the PC Hub licence fee. I'm just going to ask these two gentlemen to leave. Right, this is the approval of payment for the PC Hub licence fee, which is £12,775, which we pay annually. Could I have a proposal, please, to accept that fee?
For the benefit of the tape, Chair, just wondering if it might be helpful to explain what that actually means, the annual licence fee for the Hub.
It's the rent we pay for being a tenant in our own building.
Okay. Any more questions? Can I have a proposal, please?
Would it be pertinent to perhaps explain a little bit more about why that doesn't sound quite as ridiculous as it sounds?
Essentially, it's the only financially viable way of making the Hub book to balance. Yeah.
And so we say that it provides a
facilities
for the parish council as well.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, we would be sitting out in the room. Okay, can I have a proposal, please? Councillor Barnes, second of the second of Councillor Cowley, all those in favour? That's carried. Unanimous. Yes, that was unanimous.
Thank you.
We get out
to the door.
Thank you. To consider approving the payment for the traffic survey. This is £1,000. This is the first stage of the Futures Group actually doing the analysis of the traffic movements, not speed awareness or anything like that. This is traffic movements within the village to help with the local plan and everything the Futures Group is doing. And the first invoice has arrived, which is £1,000 to pay for the boxes to do the survey. So we need to approve this payment. Can I have a proposal, please? Councillor Cowley, can I have a seconder? Councillor Travis, all those in favour? Again, that's carried unanimous. Right, moving on to PC 12619, governance matters. To consider renewing membership of Cambridgeshire Acre, ACRA, which is, I think, I believe, £57. Correct? That is £57, isn't it?
I would like to get some clarification. I looked on their website and I thought, still don't really understand what they do. So I'm basically going to say, what is it that Cambridgeshire Acre can provide us with?
So they're, they're an advisory body for councils. A support body might be a better way of describing it. One of the things they are really very good at is doing affordable housing studies. So if you ever want to know how many people in Melbourne are on the list or you know, what sort of affordable housing Melbourne might need in the future, then ACRA are very good at doing that. They also offer a number of other services to parish councils. I think they may just have stopped doing this one, but they have up until recently offered a payroll service, and they also put on a number of conferences and events and training days and what have you through the year. So they are not used as often as someone like Capel or it might be, but then again the fee is only about £60 a year.
£57.
Yeah. And how does that compare with Capel's fee?
Capel is more than 10 times higher.
Yeah, as I wondered, yes.
Councillor Travis?
Well, just to ask, have we used them in the last year?
No.
And do you as clerk recommend that we renew?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay, any further questions? Right. Can I have a proposer to renew at the cost of £57 for this year? Councillor Kilmurray. Seconded, Councillor Travis. All those in favour? That's unanimous. That's carried unanimous. Thank you. Right. Next. Is PC 12619B to consider a request from Melbourne Primary PTFA on this year's firework display.
Can I report on this, Chair?
I think. I don't think we need to leave.
No, there's no money involved.
There's no money involved. Please, yes, if you'd like.
Okay, so the, as residents will probably know, the firework display is probably the most well-attended event in Melbourne in the calendar year in terms of number of parishioners who turn up. And it's currently held on land behind the British College. But this year, construction on the artificial football pitch is going to start there. So using that venue for the fireworks display is now not a possibility anymore. The PTFA came to the parish council and asked if it would be possible for them to have the fireworks display this year on any one of the patches of land that the parish council looks after, namely the recreation grounds. To that end, the chair of the council and I had a meeting with them last week to further understand their requirements. And it is a possibility, although by no means a certainty, that the firework display this year could be held on either the new recreation ground where the pavilion is or the old recreation ground opposite on the other side of the moor. The next step, should council decide they are interested in sort of progressing this, is for a risk assessment to be undertaken. And that risk assessment would typically be done by the company who actually put on the firework display. I don't know what they're called. They would come along and assess any site as to its feasibility for a firework display with a view to, you know, minimum safe distances and crowd safety and all the rest of it. So that's where we are with that. We discussed the possibility. and I have suggested to the school that if they want to come forward with a firm proposal or a request to use our land, then the very next step would be to get that fire, get that risk assessment done. Excuse me. And I've also suggested to them that they might want to talk to TTP to see if they can use any of their land, but with a following conversation with Councillor Comari, we're not sure that might be possible. So that's where we are. If council are minded to sort of investigate this further, then we need a risk assessment.
are we voting on this to say whether we're prepared to proceed at this stage?
You can vote, or you can just sit on it, or you can say we might be interested, subject to a risk assessment.
Mr. Clark, would you like a drink of water?
Yes, please. Thank you.
I think it's at this stage it's a case of just wait and see until we get the report, because we can't really make any decisions until we get an assessment from their people. And then that will also have to be looked at, I believe, by our own insurance as well, if we were going to proceed.
Our insurance providers will want to see their insurance.
So I think at this stage this is just a watching brief. Sorry, Councillor Kilmarnock?
I'm definitely in favour if the land is suitable of letting the PTFA carry out that fireworks display. But who would be paying for the assessment?
They would.
That would be for the PTFA.
There's no cost.
So there's not going to be any cost to us.
My major concern would be the disruption to football, because the display is scheduled for Saturday the 7th of November. Mm-hmm. And that is just about as busy as it gets for football in Melbourne. And there will be matches on both recreation grounds, not only on the day of the display, but also on the day after. And as councillors are aware, Melbourne Dynamos pay us a not inconsiderable sum of money every year for exclusive rights and first priority to use of the recreation grounds. So my main concern, apart from, you know, is it feasible from a risk assessment point of view, thank you, Arthur, is what disruption there might be to organised sport.
Okay. So I think at this stage, Councillor Hart.
I'm just wondering, because historically the fireworks fair used to be held at the primary school.
Yeah. Until they built on the land where
it used to be. Yeah, I didn't know if it was only moved to the village college while the building work was going on.
No, they commented on that when they came to do the assessment, or they came up to help them there, but there just isn't enough space there to do it. And of course, it's their biggest fundraiser of the year.
I think it's got bigger as well since they moved to Anglesey. Yeah.
I think at this stage there is nothing really to vote on. It's a case of watching brief, and we need to wait to see what their assessment comes in like and what their proposal is, and then we'll have to bring that back to council to vote on. Although they've got a time slot, I believe the end of March is being held open for them by the firework company, so they're going to have to move on this quite quickly to get back to get us to approve if we want.
But they do know that we can't act until we get that risk assessment.
Councillor Travis.
Just a comment. I mean, if this does go ahead, then I think we would need a comprehensive agreement written up between us and the PTFA, which sets out, you know, who, if we're going to have losses or if the dynamos are going to be disrupted, there needs to be some sort of compensation paid for that, and the cleanup has to be done in a proper way and in a specified period of time, that kind of thing.
That was explained to them at the time that, you know, there could be matches on the day that they're going to be setting out and also the very next day. And they assured us that everything gets cleared up on the day.
Yeah.
At the evening, the firework people remove everything, but that's not to say there's going to be on fireworks lying around, but overall there will be the situation. So, but I think, as Mr. Clark said,
it still is pretty much the case that every square inch of the new recreation ground will be a football pitch at that time of year.
Yeah.
And if it rains, which is very likely to do at that time of year, then 1,000 people tromping over the football pitches will definitely render them completely unplayable.
But I agree with Councillor Travis, because I think it's not just fireworks lying around, it's the gazebos they put up to sell like food and whatever else, and I think they do take that down the next day.
My wife was very much involved in on the evening this year of taking it all apart. So,
And what time do they roughly put it up? Do you remember?
They put it all up on a Saturday morning. They transport materials to site on the Friday at the moment, and then erect things on the Saturday afternoon, mostly.
So it could conflict potentially.
So it might be an update deja vu for the previous thing when we were talking about the asset value. Because if we're already saying that 1,000 people being on the football pitches in a time when the weather might be wet and soggy and gazebos and things, that actually that will do too much damage to the football pitches, is it worth
Is it worth even going through some assessment?
Because that just delays them perhaps finding another piece of land. Is it, are there any other land that we have that they could use?
There were three suggestions made to the PTFA on the day. The first is that I suggested they might want to have a chat with TTP.
Yeah.
Because they've got all that land earmarked where the science park expansion is going to go. But I suspect, having talked to the chair of the planning committee, they would have broken ground by then, and that's probably a non-starter.
I don't know, but that's my feeling.
The other suggestion I made is that I do happen to know that the county council have put forward three sites in Melbourne in the forthcoming local plan as part of the call for sites. My understanding is that these sites are disused farms. So I've suggested to the PTFA that they have a chat with the county councillor and see if they can borrow a piece of the council's land for that one event, one night, and they seem to think that might be, you know, that might be quite a good idea. So I think they've gone off to do that. I'm not involved with that, other than making the suggestion.
Councillor Barnes.
So last year it was up on the NBC land.
Yes.
Presumably that was the football pitches, and it was set in the same issue.
No.
Was it not?
No. Where was that's it? Just open space. But they're building a big AstroTurf football pitch on it this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had a site where they could restrain the people considerably. So it's such a big site, they were able to contain the crowd into a quite small portion of the field.
Okay.
So it was less of a problem to them, I think. It must have had an impact, but I think it was quite a light impact.
Okay.
I don't think they've got any pitches where the footfall actually goes.
Oh, okay.
I think when we looked, the old rec, when you're looking at the sites of the barbecue and other bits and pieces, there is a concreted area over by the cadets' hut. So that may be a better
scouter.
Yeah, scouter. That may be a better, slightly better option. Whether it's a big enough site, they were more concerned about people just standing on the road and not paying for a ticket and watching it.
But it's also worth pointing out that the old rec is also a football pitch, and it will be used at that time.
Yes.
So really, it's a case of, do we vote? Are we prepared to receive their proposal? Are we prepared to do that, or do we want to reject now because of the size of football?
Can I clarify how you've left it with them? Have you left it with them with the expectation that we are going to say yes if they come forward with a proposal which is insurable?
No. In which case, I said the opposite.
I would suggest we don't need to do anything then. It's up to them to come to us for a proposal.
Other than the fact we just note on the minutes that we have discussed it and we're waiting for their proposal before we can make any informed decision.
Okay. Yeah, they've not proposed anything to us, we can't make a decision on it.
Yeah. Mm. And how they intend to police it as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, to be fair, I never agendaed it tonight for a decision. It's just we've had the meeting now, so I felt council should be informed.
Yeah. I think it's worth just noting that we have discussed it at council, but we will wait to see their full proposal before we make any informed decision, which we need to make an informed decision. Okay. Right. Next little item. To consider a report from myself on a speed awareness initiative. I've had a discussion with the head teacher and also with our PCSO, and they're both on side for doing a speed awareness initiative with the younger element of the school. This would mean a competition where we can have teams put together, laminated, or that there would be posters of the nature to deal with speeding in the village, which we could ask our wardens to put up strategically placed in and outward exits and entrances to the village. And the winning team for the actual posters would receive a small prize of say £250 to be spent on books for the school. And their sort of prize, as it were, the winning team, would be for them to get a trip to Cambridge. Lunch and travel would be paid for by the council on top. They get their lunch, they go into Waterstones or one of the bookshops, they select the books using the £250 to supplement the school, to help the school. So it's a day out for the winning team, no individual prizes for the individual people, but a team event, and probably all in all it would come to about £300. I'm looking for a agreement for me to proceed with this initiative. So I need someone to propose it if you're happy.
Can we ask some questions?
No. Can I have that, please, yes, Councillor Hart?
I'm just asking, really, is this something that the parish council is allowed to do with our money?
Yes.
And how many people it would be in a team?
That would be down for the school to check. If we're going to take this on the basis of the way it was done, we did this in Bali, we left it with the discretion of the teachers to actually identify the teams. They put one sort of different groups of ages into the same teams, and various different ways to do it, because it would be unfair if you had the 4-year-olds up against the 5-year-olds up against the 8-year-olds, because you get a slightly better picture.
I think it's, you know, we're talking about trying to engage young people in the village.
Exactly.
And I think it's it's a way of doing that. I'm just wondering how, yes, the whole school would be engaged in the sense that they would join
it would be below a certain age group, but it wouldn't be the ones doing SATs and things like that. The head teacher said she wanted to go with the lower age groups, but it's still an initiative to get the PCSO in the school, gets to identify it, speed awareness, they run against the signs and things like that to sort of see what speed they can get the signs up to. So it's a little bit of fun for them initially, then we have a little talk, and then we offer them up the competition, and then the best ones get laminated up by the council. Nicely sized, and they get put around the village, strategically placed, because they do. History has gone with this. I've seen this, and also the police agree with this, that this does slow drivers down coming through areas where they see these sort of signs with kiddies, "I live here" sort of thing, "please drive carefully," you know, "this is my home," that type of thing, in all these different types of initiatives, and they do tend to work with a lot of drivers.
But just correct me if I'm wrong, the main reason for this is to make the kids more aware of the speed of vehicles.
Yes.
That's really what we're talking about. Yes. It's not talking about signs to make drivers drive more carefully. It's about kids behaving more carefully.
It's to make the children aware of speeding and that you shouldn't go above certain speeds and things like this, and also be aware when they're in the road. Sometimes people will be travelling faster than they think. There's that part of it. There's also an element of assisting with slowing down traffic in the village as well, because it does have an effect.
So, I mean, I, like Councillor Hart, I'm in favour of this, except I'm not quite sure how is it going to be presented to the kids in the school? Is there a package of stuff for the teachers to use as a teaching aid, or is it just down to them to open it up in a sort of...
No, it's done by the PCSO.
Okay.
He will be in uniform, and the way that I can only work on what I've done before, the way it's been done before, you come into the school, the PCSO in his uniform, you put up speed equipment, and the children actually run at it, so they can see how speed cameras work. The faster they run, which is exciting for them, the more miles you get up on the little speed clocks. But then there's a little talk by the PCSO about speed awareness, about traffic management, in the sense of you've got to look left, right, and all these type of things that relate to speeding. And then we have a competition for the children to actually make these posters up to say, "Drivers driving through our village, we live here, can you please drive carefully?" And it's that part of it that gets the reward. It's that initiative. It's not too sinister, it's just purely and simply to engage with the younger element in the schools and get them to see a policeman, they understand a policeman's a good person, and that type of thing. So it all works in conjunction with that, and also the parish council will pay for the money for the books and for a lunch, and they're travelling to Cambridge. So that's it.
I just go back to my... I still can't understand why it's not all the young people, because I'm thinking about the young people, the older young people, the year 5 and 6, who are out on their own, more in the village.
I've not actually gone into detail with Stephanie exactly who exactly at the school would be involved.
Yeah, just think a whole school events, normally, you know, the idea of a whole school initiative, it works better,
because
it's more inclusive.
Then you would get an awful lot of posters to judge.
That's right.
Well, I can suggest that. But if the council would like to approve it, if all of the school is involved, then fine.
I'm not being as fussy as that. But I'm just questioning the council. But I think it's a jolly good idea.
Was the school okay to buy books on Waterstones? Because you know.
Well, I say water stones.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, because it's more, I think if school purchased materials from a dedicated supplier, they probably get it cheaper. I say water stones are quite expensive.
No, this was, I see what you mean. This was actually an initiative for the winning team to get a day to go into Cambridge. They select the books.
Okay.
It's their. They've won the prize, they select the books for the school.
Yeah.
And it's not specifically about supplies and things like that. We're funding them £250 to buy some books, and they should be able to buy a lot of books for the school. So I think it's down to the children to actually decide what they're going to buy, obviously under some level of guidance.
Yeah.
But and they get their lunch paid for and they're travelling in and out. So that's their fun day, that's their prize.
Okay, so it's not, so you said a different age group, so it wouldn't be a prize per age group?
That would be, again, I would allow the school to do that. That's what we did before. I think they sent, in Bali, they sent the 6-year-old, the 7-year-old, the 8-year-old all went in as part of the team.
Oh, I see, okay.
And then they picked the relevant books with the money that Bali Parish Council stumped up for, okay, and paid for their food and their travel. Mm. That was it. So, Councillor Kilmarin.
I'm just thinking about the costs. You talk about £300, £250 on books and £50 on travel.
Well, it can be whatever we want it to be, but you could say £200 and £50 for travel and lunches.
I think £50 for travel and lunches can not be enough. But, a team of 5 kids and 2 staff members.
Okay. So. Okay, I'm just
looking at the train fares.
Unfortunately, Bali was able to send them in their own bus, so it wasn't. Okay, so if you said £200 for the thing and £100 for travel and lunches,
it's just getting an idea.
No, that's fine.
Rather than having an open check.
No, it wouldn't be open. No, it would be a closed.
Well, it's just to get a proper feel for what it's going to cost.
If we propose £200 for books and £100 for travel and lunches.
I'm just going to suggest that perhaps you don't the amount of money that there's a finite amount of money, say you're saying £300, and then
I need to give the council something to work with.
Sure, but in terms of their depending depending how many children, then they'll work out what their cost of travel are. It may well be that they've decided to go and have a look at the Waterstones books and then order from somewhere else. But what they do with it is up to them. But I just think if you're saying you want £300, then that's
yeah. That will be the budget I would give the school. Okay. Any more questions? Can I have a proposal, please?
Can I just clarify something before you do that? Sorry, Chair. But the auditor is going to ask me this, so I need to get it straight. So, you are proposing to run a speed awareness initiative in conjunction with the PCSO aimed at primary school children?
Yes.
That's the first thing?
Yes.
And then there'll be a competition, and the winners will get some money to spend on school materials?
On books,
school materials.
And the posters will be blown up and laminated and then put around the village.
Where?
Entrances and exits.
To the village?
To the village.
Right, there'll be a cost associated with that and a planning application process.
What, for the wardens to actually put up some?
Yeah, if you want to put a sign on the highway, you need permission.
Okay.
Which to be cost at that time. I think it certainly shouldn't deter you from doing it. Yeah. But I just wanted to understand what was happening in the stages so that I could identify that you do indeed have a legal power to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for those councillors interested then, the power that allows you to get involved in the speed awareness initiative is the Local Government and Rating Act 1997, so you're covered there. The expenditure, £300,
mm-hmm.
would be section 137 of the Local Government Act 1972, so you're covered there. So you do have a legal power to do what it is you're proposing to do, but it signs up on, for example, lampposts or on highways, you can't just go and do that, you need permission.
What about if you put them on bins?
Depends who you own the bin and what it is.
But if residents wanted to put a sticker on their bin.
Oh, wheelie bins, yeah, fine.
Yeah, wheelie bins, that's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Wouldn't need permission for that.
Talking about laminated though, so they're big enough for drivers to see as they come in. And it would be the winning team's posters that will be around the village. Mm-hmm. So that is part of the thing. I did that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think the idea of those when you see speed limit things on people's bins, it's really effective. So if we couldn't, the fact that you could have then people in the village could be, you know, good to have them on their bins when they're put out, and it does make a big difference, I think. So, yes, but that's across that bridge when you come to it.
Okay. I will obviously bring this back to council when I have firmed up with the school, etc., etc., but can I have a proposal, please? Councillor Hart, thank you. Yeah. Can I have a second? Councillor Kilmurray, all those in favour? Thank you. You know, okay. Thank you both. Thank you for your patience, everybody, on that one. Right, we'll move on quickly. Right, to consider an environmental policy, which has been put forward. Have you all had a chance to read the environmental policy? Are there any questions or issues or with the said policy? Okay, so can I have a proposal to accept the policy, please? Councillor Travis, seconded. Councillor Kilmurray, all those in favour? That's carried unanimous. Thank you very much. So that's now to be introduced. Right, correspondence from the parish clerk under PC 12719. There's
no
correspondence this month, okay?
Very quiet with the holiday period.
Right. Okay, now PC 12819, I will pass across to think about HR.
Oh, we're doing risk assessments.
Yes, risk assessments.
Yes, so one of the things that came out of a recent HR panel meeting was we're aware that our low working risk assessment needs reviewing, and a request will be made to the clerk to discuss that with the wardens in terms of the risk assessment and the assistant clerk's risk assessment and the time bank coordinator, for them to reflect on their individual needs. I mean, obviously the wardens will be using more equipment, but also we're aware that in terms of low working, the time bank coordinator may well be visiting home.
Actually, think about it, all of your staff work alone.
Yeah.
At various intervals.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there'll be different, we're just mindful that there'll be different risks associated with different people's roles. So if we could ask Mr. Clark to think about that, and then also to think about, bring to the attention of the HR panel those risk assessments for lone working for both the for himself, and then we'll talk directly with the RFO as well, because absolutely any time any of our employees will be lone working, but in different environments. So mindful of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and moving on to PC 12919, health and safety, to consider any updates.
Well, the lone working sort of fits in with that as well, isn't it? But so that's nothing else other than that.
Okay, and now to move on to PC 13019, HR matters, to receive and consider any updates from the HR panel.
Thank you. Yes, so the HR panel met today, and as it's a new year, we decided we needed to get out of room and have a sort through our documents and see where we are. We have been looking at a review really of their, what's come to the finance governance, our financial policies and procedures, and we're mindful now, we're in a process of discussion with our clerk and our RFO, how we divide the reporting responsibilities. So next month, council can look forward to a position paper that we'll be bringing after those roles and responsibilities have been discussed with the RFO and the clerk in terms of going forward with that. It's feeling as though things are coming together rather nicely, because we've got our appraisal system in place and it's well established, and that seems to have really helped us identify areas that need fine-tuning, which then has a knock-on effect on our terms of reference. So our terms of reference were last reviewed in 2018, so they're up for review as well, and then we can use those to reflect, as I say, sort of going forward, how we our responsibilities. So that's something to look forward to next month. Is there anything else to add? Looking at Councillor Travis, that's where we are really at the moment. We have our next HR panel meeting on the 3rd of February, so we'll have everything in good time, Mr. Clark, to be circulated for next month's meeting.
There was the assistant clerk.
Oh yes, thank you. Yeah, one of the things when we were sweeping out our cupboards, we noticed that on the Parish Council website, our assistant clerk is still down as assistant
to the parish clerk.
So we're just wondering if that could be updated, because once our previous assistant to the parish clerk obtained her super qualification, it was then we agreed to formally note that she had the role as an assistant. now an assistant clerk. So we'll obviously then need to reflect that in contracts, just that change of wording. So, but if we could ask that Mr. Clark, if it's able to be updated on the website. Thank you. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. Any questions for Chair of our HR panel? Please, loads of questions. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Hart. Right, PC 13119, if anybody's got anything they want to consider for agenda next month, if you either got any information now or wish to pass it forward to the clerk during the period before he issues the
something that came to mind towards the end of last year. Some of you might be aware that the food bank in Royston had closed. And I was just wondering, one of the people, one of the places you used to be able to drop the food off the food bank if the food bank was closed, was one of the Newlings funeral directors in Royston. And so I went with my bag of things to drop off, and the lady that works there lives in Melbourne. And we were just saying, what a shame, because obviously it's not closed because there isn't a need, it's closed because the people who volunteered to run it have moved out of area. So she said, do you think there will be any mileage in us having a food bank in Melbourne? And so one of the issues, obviously, is storage and collection points. But I wondered, then I mentioned it to somebody else, and they said, well, we have, as a parish council, we have a workshop. I don't know how much storage there might be in there, but I just...
It's got all sorts of things in there.
So I just put it out there, really, to think about if anybody could think of any way that, or anyone else that could perhaps provide that service.
Could I suggest that maybe this is something the Time Bank might get involved in? Is it
yes.
possible that volunteers from the Time Bank might be interested in running a food bank?
Might be worth suggesting. Could we take that with our Time Bank manager?
And also, I mean, if we put an appeal out, I mean, there must be all kinds of business premises in Melbourne, some of which may have empty sheds, stuff. They might get some kudos from letting it out, but I think, I don't know.
Just to clarify with council, though, I can't record any decisions or actions.
Absolutely.
Thinks any of the ideas that have just been bandied around are good, please feel free to exercise your own initiative and go and have that conversation.
And if it
needs to go on a future agenda, it will.
Absolutely.
I will take that up and mention it to the Time Bank.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your ideas. Thank you. Right, final item, PC 13219, to note the date of the next meeting, will be the 24th of February. Thank you all very much for attending. I'll close the meeting.